gives me great pleasure tonight to introduce our speaker for tonight, which is Derek from Orchid.
Hi, everybody. My name is Derek, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. Good to be here. It's good to be sober. I'm really excited to be here. It's Easter Sunday, right? So I'm going to give my resurrection talk tonight. Guaranteed to offend everybody. Keith's already pissed off at me. Was pretty much my goal tonight. I want to let you know that you may not get anything out of this tonight, but I definitely will get something out of this tonight because I'm going to remember, you know, what it was like, what happened, right, to force a great, perfect individual like me into this horrible outfit like Alcoholics Anonymous, and then what it's like now, right? So I'm going to get something else. I'm going to remember, just like the newcomers remember vividly, about how horrific it is to try and figure out how to get sober, really. And I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy. But I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I'm the class of 1987. I wish I could tell you that that I have that much sobriety. I only have 17 years. I decided to take a little drinky poo after 10 years. Life just wasn't working out exactly how I wanted it to. The program didn't fail me. But before I get too deep into this, I just want to take a second and just really thank Vicki and my favorite person in Alcoholics Anonymous, Kristen, for asking me to speak tonight. I really appreciate that. That's a big deal. If it wasn't for the structure, I mean, what would we be doing tonight, right? We'd be sitting home, you know, with a remote control or whatever. And then I especially want to thank, you know, Josie and Layton and Valente and what's your name again?
Raymond.
Who's in the running for Newcomer of the Year for sponsees, for coming out tonight. You know, these guys I had the privilege to work with and work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and just when I'm really focusing on having a great day thinking about myself, they call me and interrupt that. And it just really pisses the guy off, right? But I have to thank them because they get me out of myself. And if you're new here and if you've been around here a while, that's really the deal here is we uncover, like, all this horrible stuff. We discover and then we discard it and then we get busy helping other people. And I lost 10 years of sobriety because, you know, I was waiting for, you know, when am I going to get mine, right? I've been sober 10 years. You'd think I'd get happy, right? I mean, isn't that why I'm here? I missed the whole point. I missed everything. It's about helping others and helping other people get sober. So if you're new here tonight, you're in for a real treat because we're all here to help you get sober. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that at about 9 months of sobriety, my sponsor called me up, this is many moons ago, and said, look, meet me out in front. He was a very nice guy. He said, meet me out in front. And he said, and so I walked out front of my house where I was staying or whatever, and he said, get in the car. And we're driving along, and I said, where are we going? He goes, none of your business. And we pull up at this junkyard, and he walks in, and he was getting his doctorate at the University of Florida, and he walks up, and one of the mechanics in the junkyard walks toward him, and he goes, hey, Steve, how you doing? And Steve says, I'm doing good. Hey, look, I got a real corker. This guy's got 9 months. What do you got? I'm sick and tired of dragging his ass to meetings. And the mechanic there at the junkyard said, oh, I got this old piece of junk right here, and you can have it for a couple of $100. He paid him off, and he said, tow it to this kid's house. And then he told me, this is what I need you to do to fix it up and so forth, and then this car is yours. Because I'm not driving you to AA meetings anymore. I want you to take other people to AA meetings. So the reason why I tell that story is if you're new here and your sponsor hasn't bought you a car yet, you have a serious bitch. Probably your first one in Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's some heavy hitters in here that sponsor a lot of people. So if you haven't had your sponsor hasn't bought you a car yet, I'm serious. That needs to happen almost immediately, or we'll have a talk. Raymond's getting ready to start sponsoring here in a little bit, so he'll be helping out with that. I do want to talk a little bit about, I did drink just a tiny bit, I guess, and use other non-habit-forming forms of alcohol, but I found something the other day, and I want to share it because I think it sets up the talk perfectly, and I won't bore you with reading. I'm going to read a little bit, but the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you've been here for a while, the preamble is right up here. You can follow along if you have 25 vision instead of 20/20. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. It goes on to say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect. Have I put the newcomers to sleep yet? Yep, I got a couple of them snoozing. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish any controversy. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. But what I ran across the other day was the original preamble. And so what I'd like to do is read that to you. It's no BS. It comes from a 50-year sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very possible this is it, but I find it fascinating because when I came at AA in 87, we weren't nice to the newcomers, really. So if you're looking to for people to be nice to, there's a lot of people around here that care how you feel. My sponsor didn't care how I felt at all. So I'll read this to you because I think it's fascinating. And at the end, it says, don't listen to anything that I have to say that you can't reconcile in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think that's a beautiful way to end. But it says, original preamble, we're gathered here because we are faced with the fact that we are powerless over alcohol and unable to do anything about it without the help of a power greater than ourselves. We feel that each person's religious views, if any, are his own affair. The simple purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to show what may be done to enlist the aid of a power greater than ourselves, regardless of what our individual conception of that power may be. Stick with me. In order to form a habit of depending upon and referring all we do to that power, we must at first apply ourselves with some diligence. What does that word mean? By often repeating these acts, they become habitual, and the help rendered becomes natural to us. We have all come to know that as alcoholics, we are suffering from a serious illness for which medicine has no cure. Don't say that a lot around here. Our condition may be the result of an allergy which makes us different from other people. I'm different. Are you? It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar permanently cured. The only relief we have is to offer is absolute abstinence. And then this is brilliant. I can see Bill writing this. It says, absolute abstinence, which is the second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I want to be really clear here. If, you know, I was able to stop drinking all through marijuana and cocaine back in 1987. It's a whole different program. They don't do that too much anymore around here. But so if you're doing that, it's really not absolute abstinence. That's the deal. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Each member squares his debt by helping others to recover. See, that's the deal. The way I keep sober is by helping another person to stay sober. That's how I square my debt. So and why I think I lost my sobriety is I came in here and I said, okay, I got mine. I don't need to help anybody else. I'm too busy. You don't understand. I have a fancy life I have to get to, right? Thank you for giving me the cure. Now I don't care about you, really. You can all go pound sand. So it's not surprising that I lost my sobriety. An Alcoholics Anonymous is an alcoholic who, through application and adherence to the AA program, has forsworn the use of any and all alcoholic beverage in any form. So, damn, I think Zima's out, and maybe even boxed wine. And maybe, I'm so angry, I missed, what is it, the new tequilas? Like, they weren't out yet, right? They have, like, pure tequila and stuff. Like, I think it would be different this time. We'll take a poll later. The moment he takes so much as one drop of beer, wine, and spirits, or of any other alcoholic beverage, he automatically loses all status as a member of AA. Is not interested in sobering up drunks who are not sincere. Excuse me, it says AA is not interested in sobering up drunks who are not sincere in their desire to remain sober for a time. Not being reformers, we offer our experience only to those who want it. About halfway through, but please stay with me. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, on which we can join in harmonious action. And then it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our program. Those who do not recover are people who will not or simply cannot give themselves to this simple program. Now you may like this program or you may not, but the fact remains, it works. It is our only chance to recover. And then it says, there is a vast amount of fun in the AA fellowship. Some people might be shocked at our seeming worldliness, right, and levity, but just underneath there lies a deadly earnestness and a full realization that we must put first, things first, and with each of us, the first thing is our alcoholic problem. So that, my sponsor said early on, he taught me, he said, Derek, if you put anything between you and your recovery, you're going to lose it. He said, I said, but what about my girlfriend? He said, is she going to stick around while you continue to vomit into the instrument panels of her car? Is she going to stick around? And I said, no. He said, then the only chance you have to stick together is for you to put your sobriety first. And to drink is to die. Faith must work 24 hours a day in and through us or we perish. Last paragraph. In order to set our tone for this meeting, this is where it gets really interesting, I ask that we now bow our heads in a few moments of silent prayer and meditation. So if we could do that, just a few silent moments in prayer and meditation. Maybe I'll actually get out of the way of this talk tonight. Okay. I wish to remind you that whatever is said at this meeting expresses our own individual opinion as of today, and as of up to this moment, we do not speak for AA as a whole, and you are free to agree or disagree as you see fit. In fact, it is suggested that you pay no attention to anything which might not be reconciled with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't have a Big Book, it's time you bought one, read it, studied it, lived with it, loan it, scatter it, and then learn from it what it means to be an AA. And that's, I think, what I want to talk about tonight, is what it's been like for me to be an AA. And I guess I have to start with qualifying. So, you know, how does a guy like me, you know, almost perfect in every way, end up in a fellowship like this? And I have to tell you, I had a great childhood. Up until I was about 12, my family split, you know, I remember my mother was pretty upset about it. She was in the throes of her alcoholism. And I remember my dad said, you know, I've got a nice girlfriend, and, you know, you're going to stay with your mom. So I knew it was like to kind of be, you know, like when you try and take the gum off the bottom of your shoe, you know, get it off. So, you know, yeah, that does affect, you know, people. And I'm not saying that's the reason I became an alcoholic, but I got the message pretty well at that time because my mom was a horrible alcoholic. I mean, screaming, raging, yelling, and you don't want me to come and live with you? You want me to live with her? So, yeah, absolutely. So my younger brother's, he's 6 years old, I'm 12, so I start raising him, right, because my mom's drinking, right? I make a great parent. I say things like, you know, if you do this, I'll love you. That's pretty good since there's nobody else for him to look to, right? It's our relationship's just a tad bit strained today, but, you know, you never know. It could get better. My mom is doing all this stuff, and I am hearing her every night going to sleep, screaming at the top of her lungs, why is everybody shitting on me? And usually at some point she would grab a bottle and throw it across the room or something like that, or come in and beat on my brother and I, right? This is just a kind of a happy way to grow up, right? So I remember my dad came to me, maybe it was like 13 months later, or maybe a couple months later, and said, you know, alcoholism tends to run in our family a little bit. Excuse me. He said, so what I'm going to do is, if you can make it till you're 18 years of age, I'll buy you a brand new 325i BMW. And I said, that sounds great, Dad. That sounds perfect. I hadn't taken any alcohol or done any non-habit-forming marijuana. And I remember that I was determined not to drink or use because I wanted that. I mean, I was just kind of getting old enough to really appreciate a brand new BMW. And back before they had sliced bread, I mean, that was a nice car, right? And I remember it lasted for a whole week. Because one of the guys in the apartments we were in said, hey, come on over here, why don't you try some of this? And I took my first sip of alcohol, and that was it. I mean, it did something for me. I felt just absolutely spectacular. I don't know about you, but I love getting loaded. I don't know. I really love to get loaded. I really like to drink. In fact, if I figured out a way how to successfully drink, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Just let you know that little secret. But what happened is I started doing it, and I became a juvenile delinquent, and eventually I ended up, getting to the point where I met some other Alcoholics Anonymous membership accelerator drugs. I don't know if you've ever seen those before. They tend to accelerate our membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I experimented with those, and I remember I was trying to get about halfway through my undergraduate at UCLA, and I learned about the student loan program, and learned about how to commit felonies by taking the money that they were supposed to give me for my education and not turning it in. And so I was fooling around with an alcohol dealer in Brentwood, and I had given him a couple checks for a couple of grand, and he thought I had real money. And then I got to the point where he said, look, I'm not going to kill you if you don't pay me, but I have other people that I buy my alcohol from, and they will kill you. And I'm a devout coward. So I went to my dad, and I said, Dad, I said, I might have a small problem with non-habit-forming cocaine. And he said, gee, I'm really sorry to hear that, Derek. You're going to have to eat and die before you want to get sober. And I thought, that was pretty mean. I mean, after all, you're my dad, right? But he had seen my mother get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous about 5 years earlier, and she had to fling herself off a two-story building and fracture her pelvis so that the doctor told her that she'd never be able to walk again. I mean, she went all the way down and kept going, including living with, I think it was a pedophilic pornography broker. That's where her alcoholism took her. So if you haven't quite had that yet, I love the acronym for YET. It's you're eligible too, right? And that may not be where you have to go. But so I put that piece of information into my mind, and I said, well, my particular form of alcohol that I like is selling for about half price in northern Florida. I was an LA boy. And the fact that I was going to have to eat and die to want to get sober. So what I did is I put that information into my finely tuned piece of machinery in my head, and I bought a one-way plane ticket to South Beach, Miami. And landed there and got involved in nefarious activities there. And it wasn't sure. I remember that night I spent every dime that I had. And I remember I woke up the next morning and I said, boy, I can't do that. And I had bought traveler's checks, so I went and forged and called them up and said, I seem to have lost my traveler's checks. And they gave me a whole new set. And I swore that I wouldn't drink all that night. But, of course, what did I do? I drank all that night. That just shows that. And so I screwed around in South Miami Beach for a while. I remember one of the highlights of my experience there is I had purchased some alcohol, and they had officers on the roofs looking down. And so the guy, the cruiser, came around the corner at high speed, rolled up on me like that, arms against the wall. The guy started going through my pockets, and he was pulling stuff out, alcohol out of my pocket. And at that time, they had a mandatory, 10-year sentence for that particular hardened form, first offense of alcohol. And so he's going through, that. I'll have to say, I have such a profound respect for Alcoholics Anonymous and the singleness of purpose. And if you're new here, you don't get this. Why don't you just talk about drugs? And the deal is that, there were the Oxford group and the Washingtonians, they thought they could help everybody with everything. You have a problem, you're a wife beater? Come on, we can help you. You have a problem, you pick your nose too much? No problem, our steps will help you. Hey, no problem, you tend to drink too much? No problem, we'll help you. And what happened is that program vanished, because they tried to be everything. And when you try and do everything to everyone, you can do nothing. And so the program fell apart. So Bill Wilson, early on, and the early members of Alcoholics Anonymous said, we found the answer. We actually, for the first time in 2,000 years, since we crushed grapes, have figured out how to get sober. So we're going to stay on this singleness of purpose. And so if I act a little funny around that, it's just because I can't imagine what it would be like if Alcoholics Anonymous perished. And that's why we have all these I love to listen to Chuck C. He talks about some guy had a little bit of a gambling problem in Los Angeles, and so he started this little outfit called Gamblers Anonymous. So one of his babies went out, and there's an example of being in action. But back to my story, when I came in, I was an addict. I mean, you don't understand. I'm different. I'm an addict. And then after I'd been here for a while, I became an addict and an alcoholic. And then after I'd been here even longer, I just became a regular alcoholic. And see, for me, as long as I was different than you, I didn't have to work your stupid steps. I didn't have to get sober. I can continue to go in and out, do the newcomer waltz. That's step one, two, three, slip, 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 slip. Step one, two, three, slip, 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 slip. Right? That's the newcomer waltz. I hope I've offended you by now. Because that was me. I'm a two-time detox loser. You know, the first time I went to detox, my girlfriend bought me a little model airplane, and I built that. And when she picked me up after the first week, I learned about the pink lady and squeezing sterno through cheesecloth to drink and all that, and puncturing Lysol cans and all that stuff. I learned a lot. It was fascinating. From you people were really sick, trust me. But when I got out, my girlfriend picked me up. She said, now that you're off that hardened form of alcohol, let's go to the bar and I get a drink. And I said, that's a great idea, baby, let's roll. Right? Surprise, surprise, I ended up back in detox again. But I have a profound respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, and so that's why, after being here a long time and having worked the steps, you know, I just find that this is my home in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's how that all fits into me. So anyway, back to my recovery story. So at some point, I'm having trouble and drinking and using. And I remember I got to Florida. Things got very bad, very, very bad. I remember my options were I could move in with the normal woman of the night, or I could move in with the transvestite woman of the night. So those were my options at that point. They were stealing the air conditioners out of my room to go recycle them at that point. And I remember walking down the beach. I'd been fired because I couldn't figure out how to rent cabanas on the beach. Now that requires, yes ma'am, I'll take your money and I'll take this umbrella and put it up for you. I couldn't figure that out. It was too complex of a transaction for me. And I was eating the rat defecated cheese that was in the frozen locker there on the beach where they kept the cheese for the hot dogs and stuff like that they would make. So I'd brush the rat excrement off of it and eat that to stay. And I was walking down the beach, and I don't qualify for AA, do I? Not yet. So I'm walking down the beach, and I walked up to this girl, and I said, you know, I have no place to live. I have no money. I have been kicked out of my place. You know, will you take care of me? And she said, yes. And that's really been the story up until becoming mature, you know, and maturing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a little childish when I came in here. They say that when you pick up your first drink, when I picked up my first drink, I stopped developing. So, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 22, so I'm really a 13-year-old boy at 22 years of age, right? So, So moving right along, I remember we went back to her parents, and I lied to them and said I was a computer science graduate in UCLA because, you know, people would tell me to tell the truth. I would say, sure, which truth would you like me to tell? I mean, whatever you want me to say. I mean, it's only a lie if you believe it. And I remember going down to the Virgin Islands and living down there, but something happened in the Virgin Islands. The girlfriend, the mommy, had left. And she'd gone back to college. And I remember I left the bar that night with my night shift, and I went into a back alley, and I grabbed, I put the money in the wrong hand with a gang of, like, I guess Virgin Island, Jamaican or whatever, alcohol dealers. And I put the money in the wrong hand, and excitement broke out, and so I started running. Now, I had my alcohol in my hand. I'm not a stupid. You know, and I was running, and the next thing I know is I get clubbed upside the head, and I remember I was laying there in this dark alley, and there was blood coming out the side of my head, and I wasn't stupid. I brought a big guy from the bar with me, and he evidently stepped between me and the guy that had hit me and said, man, you don't want to do that, because the guy had a nice big knife, and he was going to stab me, and he was going to get his stuff, and he took off after the guy who had the money. And I remember when I got back to the youth hostel that night, and I finished my business. I remember I looked in the mirror for the first time and I said, you know, this isn't a lot of fun. But I'd gone all the way from my experience all the way to that, but I had more to do, absolutely. I eventually reconciled with this girl, needed my mommy back, got back to Florida, and I remember that's where a friend of hers taught me how to quit doing that other stuff through marijuana and drinking. That didn't work out so well. But I ended up in a treatment center, and that's where something incredible happened, because our big book talks about that we have a twofold disease. It's a physical allergy, which I first take that alcohol, then I have to have more, combined with a mental obsession. And so the mental obsession, I've learned, again, I don't have a single original thought, the mental obsession is someday I'm going to learn to control and enjoy my drinking. So if you're new here, hopefully that resonates a little bit, because I'm going to control it. You just watch, right? So here's how. But the problem is when I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. As we heard the other day, one of the gals in here was reading out of one of the stories in there. And that twofold disease, when I learned that, after I'd been here for a while, I started to realize maybe I had a little bit of hope. Because if I tell you that story and about that story of powerlessness and how I just had to keep drinking and had to keep doing those other things, you would think, like so many of us from our relatives, like my relatives would say, well, why don't you just stop? And say, you don't understand. This is the only thing that makes my insides match your outsides. When I look at normal people, you all look happy. Out there tonight, every single one of you looks fine. But when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, or before I stopped drinking, you all looked like you had it going on. And I knew inside, I was worthless. Absolutely. I love that saying, that if you treat me special, I'll feel average. And then I'm okay. But if you treat me average, I'll feel less than. And then I've got to stick it to you. Right? So you can imagine what that was like to be an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, right? I'm the king of the world, but I feel absolutely horrible inside. And usually what happened before I got sober and even into sobriety for many years, usually what someone would come up to me and say, look, dude, I'm on to you. You know, you need to move on. You don't need to be playing these games around here. We know that you're a conner and a taker and all that stuff. And so when I say I've grown up, and grown old in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I have the hair color to prove it. I came in here when I was 22. But that was the deal. Growing up in AA, you wonder why we don't have our meeting tonight in the Raiders Stadium up in Oakland. You know, everybody that came into Alcoholics Anonymous, if they all said, oh, wow, this is wonderful. Teach me the steps, oh, great one. And we're all going to go skip happily to the end. You don't understand. I love the, excuse me a second. This idea that that I have a finely wound piece of machinery in me, right? And I'm speaking metaphorically, right? And when it gets to the point where I can't take it anymore, I have to frickin' get it on. Let's drink. Let's do it, right? When it gets to that point, there's no stopping me, right? I don't care if I heard this gal speak, and and she said she was sitting in a chair, and she was she was miscarrying her baby in this chair, and they were busy passing the alcohol pipe, and she didn't want to get up and go to the bathroom because she was afraid she was going to miss her hit on the bottle. Now, that's the way that I drank. I get that. I get that kind of insanity, right? And the beautiful thing is, if you're new here tonight, or if you're just passing by, or you're a defeated social drinker, or if the cops, you know, accidentally arrested you and, you know, due to no fault of your own, right? Those people come through all the time. It's okay. King alcohol, if you be a real alcoholic like me, eventually, I mean, I was like that. I mean, listening to a story like this, oh my God, you're disgusting. Thank God I'm from a good family and I won't have to have that problem, right? But what happens is I keep being willing to, like when I first was using and drinking, this is as far as I would go, right? I wouldn't do anything more than that, right? I'd certainly never steal from a friend. I mean, I have a moral compass, right? But then after I had drank some more, then, you know, this is as far as I would go. And then you get the point, right? Eventually, it's I'll do anything, right? And use anybody and do anything. But the beautiful thing is that I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember I got my first step. So if you're new and you're in treatment, this is a good one. So this is some of the highlights of my recovery. I remember I got into the treatment center. This is after my second time through detox, and they took me into a horseshoe room. And they put me at the head of the chair, and there was all the other drug addicts and alcoholics were in there. And they and the counselor was there, and they said, so Derek, and I had to spend a week writing my first step, like why I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. Now, I had the same exact story now that I had back then, but I wrote my first step out as best I could, and I went into that room. And they said, so Derek, what are you doing here? What are you doing in treatment? And I said, well, I'm a UCLA student on vacation in Florida. And they said, what? I said, well, you know, I'm vacationing. They said, you're in a residential treatment center for drug addicts and alcoholics, and you're vacationing? And I started to just really experience, I didn't really understand what was going on. Why were these people, they weren't smiling at me, because I could usually con my way out of almost any scenario. And they weren't smiling. In fact, they were starting to get angry. And what the manager did is he got up and he said, get the out of this room. And they threw me out. And he didn't use get the out of this room. And I don't want to forget what I'm talking about. I do want to say a little something about profanity. See, I try not to use profanity because when I came in here at Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, you know, you clean up your mouth, kid. You don't talk that foul language. They said, you know, Benjamin Franklin said that profanity is a weak mind attempting to be forceful. Now, I didn't say that. That's what they said. Don't key my car any more than you did last time I spoke. You know, I'm not talking about you. But it's, you know, I think about it. This is the only meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a newcomer's ever going to see. If I come in here with a ripped shirt and F-bombing this and F-bombing that, what kind of a program of attraction is that? How am I trying to help, you know, this other person, right? So I clean up, you know, I've tried to clean up my act as best I can. Not as good as Trish has, but I try, you know, my best. And but that's my piece around. See, I've lost one already. I'm sorry. Love you, brother. What I wanted to talk about is that was a horrible night because that manager of that house came to me that night that they threw me out of the first step meeting. And they said, I said, look, I just want to let you know I'm not going to make it. And he said, well, we didn't think you would. But he said, tonight, when you put your paper slippers underneath your bed, why don't you push them back up underneath there and thank those dust bunnies for giving you a week of sobriety, because from what we understand of your story, you really haven't had much of that at all. And so when I got down on my hands and knees that night and I pushed those slippers back in there, I said, thanks. And I don't know what I was saying thanks to, anything. I didn't believe in God. In fact, I knew there was no God. I wasn't an idiot. I studied biology at UCLA, the blue-green algae, the first lightning strike that created the first multi-cell organism. I knew there was no God. I knew God was a creation of man to oppress others. Right? And so when I took that act, that was impossible to do that because there's no reason for me to be thanking those little lint, you know, underneath there. But I did it, and the next morning when I woke up, I felt a little bit different. And I don't know why I felt different or whatever, but the house manager came up to me and said, dude, you look a little bit different. And our book talks about a psychic change. So that twofold disease that we have of that mental obsession with that physical allergy, that the only way to get out of that is a psychic change. And the big book says early, the best place to hide instructions on how to recover from alcoholism is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor told me. He said, because no newcomer would ever find it. And it's true, because it says right in here, it says, the main purpose of this book, in the foreword to the first edition, and I want to quote it directly, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics, and this is where they write it in italics, so that's just fancy writing basically, but in the original big book it was in all caps. So they were screaming it at the top of their lungs, what I'm about to say. Precisely how we have recovered. Now if I'm an alcoholic, you know, the guys that I get a privilege to sponsor, we spend a night talking about what the word precisely means. You know, so let's be vague about that, right? What exactly does precisely mean? Well, they laid out the instructions on how to do it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you read this book and work with a sponsor, they say in there they got about 50% of the folks that gave an honest, you know, gave an effort to it sober. We barely get 1% because we don't follow the precise instructions anymore, in my opinion. And of the remaining 50%, 25% of those got sober. So that's about a 75% recovery rate. Now, without treatment centers, sorry. I mean, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It really works. And those, so I'm in there, and I'm going to these meetings all the time, and in the treatment center was so funny because the only thing anybody wanted to do in that treatment center was, on the way back from the meetings at night, was to stop and get chicken wings. I mean, that was all anybody wanted to do, really, seriously. And here I am, I'm listening to this. These people in AA are welcoming me for the first time. They're saying things like, keep coming back. We love you until you can love yourself. We really want you here. And no one had been talking to me like that for like 5 or 6 years because I'd been scamming and running and doing all this stuff that I needed to do to get stay loaded. And so I was kind of attracted with that. I didn't know really what to do or anything, kind of like a dog chasing a car. But I remember they would make fun of me in the treatment van. You're such an idiot. Get in the car the next time when the meeting's over. They didn't have court cards in those days. It's amazing how any of us got sober. Get in the treatment van. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to make life very friendly to you in the treatment center. And it really is fun, really. Being in a treatment center, I can't imagine. I mean, that really is fun, really. My house manager would come in with a bat and kind of bang, 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 bang on the bed in the morning. That's how I want to be woken up. I mean, it screams serenity, doesn't it? I remember those days, just absolute nightmare. And I remember I was probably, 60 days sober. And I just had it. I had had it with all these people and they're working the steps and just all this stuff and going to these meetings and done it on the treatment center is absolutely miserable. And they kept talking about, you know, find a higher power, find the power greater than yourself. You know, my buddy had chosen Ozzy Osbourne as his higher power because he was a great singer and he couldn't sing that well and always wanted to be a rock band. And he was getting all kinds of praise from the people in AA because he had a higher power and I didn't. And so I remember one night I was in the back of the treatment center's dirt basketball court, old basketball rim kind of on its side, and I was trying to figure out this relationship, and I knew there was no God, so I can't work your program, I can't do your stupid steps, my only choice is to go back out. And I remember I was looking at this basketball, and I said, dear God, I didn't say that, I said probably, you know, F you or whatever, and I grabbed the basketball, and I closed my eyes, and I threw it as hard as I could toward the basket. And I said, if there is a God, this shot will go in. And it was a half-court shot, and it went in. And it's just absolutely impossible for that to happen. And I think that, you know, the old-timers talk about God will come to you as you draw near to him. You know, I love that story about little Johnny. Every day he would ride his bicycle to school. And every day he would stop and he would go into the church and he would say, dear God, I just want to let you know I'm here. And he kept doing it. And he got into a lot of trouble at school because he was always late. And coming home, his mother eventually took the switch to him. It's like, you know, you need to come home. But that was his spiritual program every day. Dear God, it's me, Johnny. I just want to let you know I'm here. And then he'd get on his bicycle and go. And it just went on for years or whatever. Dear God, it's me, Johnny. I just want to let you know I'm here. What happened is little Johnny came down with incurable cancer and suffered a horrible, horrible treatment and hair falling out and eyes falling out and arms falling off and just the worst possible punishment you could possibly imagine. And as he was dying and drawing his last breath, this doesn't end well, the lights were dimming and his family was around him at the bed. And just as he was about to draw his last breath, a voice was heard to say, dear Johnny, it's me, God. I just want to let you know I'm here. And see, that's the simplicity and the beauty of, I'm sorry, I shouldn't act like such a pussy up here at the podium. That's the thing, man, is that, you know, if you're a hopeless alcoholic right, like me, And God can meet me on my terms with a blind half-court shot that swishes in, right? It's possible. And the program in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor, its whole goal is to have you find a power greater than yourself, like Ozzy Osbourne, that you can do business with. In fact, it says that will solve your problem. So whatever you're coming here tonight, whatever your problem is, You know, if it's alcohol, welcome home. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. Get honest. Clean house. Do the things that we do around here. You know, I said to my sponsor, when am I going to stop craving alcohol? All I want to do is drink and do all this other stuff all the time. When am I finally going to get some relief? And once again, he said, you know, it's so easy to work with you because I can sound like I'm really spiritual because all I have to do is go to the big book. You never read it. You never listen to anything I say. It's clearly in here. After the 10th step, it says, we'll recoil from it as though a hot flame. So the specific instructions on how to get sober, my sponsor taught me, are right in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they say it's a simple program, but hell, it's not easy. Not at all. You want me to be honest? You want me to talk about what I did with my sister? No, kidding. You know, but that's what's required. That's what's required. That's the it's simple. But it is not easy at all. And I remember being in that treatment center and starting to work through the steps a little bit. I'll never forget this poor guy, you know, after you get sober and you've been here for a while, you know, that mechanic that bought me that car, right, that was getting his doctorate at the University of Florida in psychology, you know, he'd come down to slum it at a club like the 1600. It's where us old-timers, you know, who are something, we come down here to hang out and see if we can find somebody who's really a low-bottom drunk so we can get out of ourselves, right? Well, that's what Steve had done. Steve had come down to the local scummy 1600 club just to kind of listen to the poor folk, right? And he probably had 10 years of sobriety. And I was just whining to one of the old-timers, I need a sponsor because I want to be able to get out of the house on Saturday night or whatever to go buy chicken wings with the, you know, with the manager of the house or whatever. And so in comes Steve walking into the clubhouse dressed in his suit and tie, and the old-timer goes, hey, Steve, come over here for a second. He goes, this is your newcomer. And he looked at me and he goes, fine. So we started working the steps. And he worked the steps with me the way that his sponsor worked the steps with him, precisely how the big book talks about in there. And so I remember we got to the third step, right? So it says in here that we take this step very seriously and get down on our hands and knees and we say the third step prayer. And then we get busy taking a searching and fearless moral inventory. And that's what I did. I sat down and I wrote a non-searching, non-fearless moral inventory, amoral inventory, right? I did it all wrong. But I wrote it down as best I could. You know, I wrote down, you know, my mom's an idiot, my dad's an idiot, the police department of Los Angeles are an idiot, I wouldn't have this problem if I didn't have more money, or, you know, whatever, right? And that was my fourth step. And I went over to his house, and I mentioned a couple of things in there that I swore I'd never tell anybody, because it's just too disgusting. And when I left his house on my bicycle, which I think if you're new, that's pretty much standard operating procedure. You have to be on a bicycle. Like in the old time, if you had your watch, I think they wouldn't let you join Alcoholics Anonymous. So you can stay if you have a watch, but if you're driving a Ferrari, you might have a little bit more work to go. I think I'm safe by saying that with this crowd tonight. No offense. And it is better to give a resentment than it is to get one. So if I helped you out, call your sponsor. But I remember working through those steps. And is it? Am I going to be able to talk till 8:15, or is that going to be the hook? Because I need to know what the...
No, you can't.
Okay, well, it says... Is that it, Secretary? 8:15? Okay, I'll get sober at some point. Well, I guess I am. So, but there's a couple of things that I want to make sure that I just share. And this is, again, this is God's deal. So I'm working through these steps, and I left his house that day, and I had a feeling inside that I hadn't really ever felt before. It had been many years, not since I was a little kid, and maybe I got my first base hit, or maybe you know, when that girl said, yes, you know, I'll go to the movies with you or whatever. You know, that's kind of that wonder, if you will, that I'd lost through my drinking and da-da-da. And I remember feeling kind of free, and I went back there and I got active in Alcoholics Anonymous and I got my first job. Is it something I said?
Yeah.
If you're new here and you're just here to get your court card signed, please get your court card and leave. I'll stop. Go ahead. Get your court card. No, I don't want to bother anybody who doesn't want to be here. It's bad enough. No other takers? Okay. All right. I'll try not to offend you. So I do a fifth step and a fourth and fifth step, and I remember I get into the sixth and seventh step. Nope, we got more takers. It's all right. It's all right. It's exactly how I was. So I got into the sixth and seventh step, right? This is where, if you've been around a while, you realize that you're going to get perfect, right? This is where, in the sixth and seventh step, this is where I'm entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and then I humbly ask Him, and then they all go away, right? And we're all rendered white as snow, and I never have a bad thought again. Now, there's some people that have been around here a while that laugh at that, because that's just not the case. Bill talks about how only constant effort around our defects of character. And it's not about that. For me, what it's been about, and I've had more than my fair share of problems with the sixth and seventh step and defects of character, God knows. But for me, what it's been about is just getting sick and tired of being sick and tired, really, of those things that drove me crazy. And on a good day, saying, you know what, I just don't want to do this. I don't want to engage in this behavior sober anymore. I really don't. And that's about as spiritual as I can get around the sixth and seventh step. There's some other people that are a lot more spiritual that can talk about that. But I can tell you, when I got into the eighth and ninth, so I made my eighth step amends to my girlfriend, who I'd lied to her parents and vomited in the instrument panel. And so I wrote a letter to her parents. I said, I'm sorry that your daughter is a crack whore. And wrote that letter off. Made my amend. I'm working my steps. I've got 6 months of sobriety. My other sponsors are coming up to me in meetings and saying to their newcomers, why can't my baby be like Derek, right? He's in the running for the newcomer of the year. I was Mr. New AA. And this is how I'm working my program. And of course, she comes in the front door of the new job that I just got, and she's screaming, holding this, yelling, overreacting, right? I have been through enough therapy to recognize when somebody was overreacting. So she's overreacting and throws it down at me and screaming and da-da-da, and I got to keep my job or whatever. But so I called up my sponsor, and I said, well, your program doesn't work. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, well, I made an amend, and she got all angry and stuff like that, and I don't feel any better. And he said, you know, you really are a complete idiot. He said, so many people so much better than you have gone back out drinking. I don't understand why you're still around. You really are like the creme de la scum, Derek. You really are. And of course, that hurt my feeling. I only have one. It's either happy or sad, but it hurt my feeling at that time. And I guess I agreed to do it his way for a little while or whatever. You know, we'll do that. And so I started doing that. And the good news is that, you know, I got the 10th step, you know, continue to take a personal inventory, right, and kind of try and make amends. What that was like early for me is, hey, you know, I just want to tell you that I just misplaced my Porsche, but hey, if I could get $20, and then I would, in the middle of that sentence, I would say to, I don't know, like a church deacon or something like that, I would say, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm trying to work a program, and I just lied to you. So I really don't have a portion, da da, and all that stuff. And people would look at me like, oh my gosh, they have mental patients in AA. But that's what it was like for me. I could not stop lying, because that's who I was. And I had to say the lie, hear it, and then say, oh damn, I don't want to have to make another amend. Those were so miserable. I need to apologize now. And so I would apologize in the middle of it, of the middle of lying. Like, oh, that's such a beautiful dress. You look like crap. I'm sorry. I should have been hurt. Just in one sentence. Don't ever ask a lady, no matter how much she looks pregnant, if she's pregnant. Don't think that. I've done that so many times. And then you have to put on your men's list. Billy's nodding his head, yeah. We're kind of the AA dream team. But But the beautiful thing is, you know, I got into the 11th step, and, you know, I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. What can I do, you know, what can I do really to meditate around that? I try and listen, and it makes absolutely no sense. I have insanity going on in my head. I can't wait to, you know, run another porno video or whatever. I mean, that's the kind of meditation stuff that's going on in my head, right, when I'm 22 years of age. So that didn't work out so well. But the 12th step. My sponsor said, now that you're through this, I need you to go and inflict yourself on another human being, a newcomer, and listen to their sad story or whatever. And it's true. If you're new here, and if you've been around here a while, you look at the old-timers, somebody raises their hand, and I'm in so much trouble. The old-timers, like vampires, they jump on them at the end of the meeting, and like they're sucking the blood out of them. It's like, tell me how horrible it was, please, because I don't want to go back out drinking and using, right? And that's what we do here, but it's a win-win situation. You tell us about your hideous life, and we remember how bad our hideous lives were, right? And we somehow get through it, and we work the steps and so forth. And the beautiful thing is, you know, so I got sober. You know, I had a sponsor and got sober and, you know, had a career, went back. And, you know, some of the things, making amends at UCLA for committing grand theft, I walked in there, thought, you know, he would arrest me. And the guy said, no, you just need to pay us back. And as I was leaving his office, he said, by the way, you didn't finish your undergraduate here. Would you like to re-enroll? And I'm like, what? He said, well, no, we'd love to have you complete your bachelor's here at UCLA. And I, oh my God, I'm going to finish my bachelor's at UCLA. I mean, this was many moons ago. But just over and over, those type of stories, you know. And now I get to live through, and I'm sorry that one of my most favorite newcomers, you know, had this incredible story where he got sober and he was working through his steps, and he went up before the judge, and he got a call when he came home, and the court person or whatever, it's been a long time, I don't have all the names memorized as the players. If you know exactly who all the little people are that are in a courtroom, you need to spend more time in AA. But he got a phone call. He called me. He said, you wouldn't believe this. He said, I just got a phone call from the bailiff or whatever, and they said they're doing something that they've never done before. They're forgiving $20,000 worth of debt on me around this X, Y, and Z. It's part of a new deal they've never done before. And that is what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. I've come to expect miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where you see people crawl out of dumpsters, and the next thing you know, they're practicing law, and they have a white picket fence and 2.5 kids, if that's what they want. It happens all the time. This is a place where miracles happen. And I would say that, you know, there's so many more things that I could say, but around gratitude, you know, I'm coming out of a long-term unhappy relationship with a person that I thought, you know, through marriage, you know, that little thing, well, you know, till death do us part, stupid me, I believe that, ended, right? And the beautiful thing is, I was terrified about what that was going to be like, of how on the other side of that. And you know what? If I told you my day today, and I told you the beautiful person that's in my life today, and how my day was just 6 months beyond that transition of ending that forever, that old relationship, you know, I woke up today in a beautiful house, and I went to church and listened to a wonderful message, and I came home and I ate a wonderful meal, and I had somebody that looked at me like they actually really cared about me, which I hadn't had for many, many years. And then I came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in a car that runs, you know, and I get to share with you folks about, you know, my experience, strength, and hope. And so what I'll share with you tonight is, in closing, and I'm going to lend early because Tom's twinkling his keys and it's hurting my feelings, if you're willing to just quit just for one day at a time, that's it, that you can, this is a place where miracles happen. And, you know, my sponsor had me make a list when I was, 90 days sober, 6 months sober. And he said, write down in your wildest imagination what you could have at the end of your first year, at the end of your fifth year. And we couldn't even think beyond that because I couldn't even imagine that. And I'll tell you, I wrote down some things in there like, you know, have a motorcycle that doesn't break down, you know, not have the police know my first name, you know, stuff like that, right? And I'll tell you, he said, if you write that list down, he said, it will so far surpass what you could possibly, if you sat down and wrote, I want to do, you know, just your wildest imagination, it will surpass that. And so that's what I'd like to end with tonight, is I'll tell you that, that Alcoholics Anonymous is a place where absolutely miracles happen, and I'm so grateful that you asked me to share my story tonight. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Give Derek another round of applause.